Oh yeah, no, I think he went to take a nervous piss or something.
Oh, okay, good. Good, perfect.
yeah. He's got a Johnny Colt nervous piss in the
There you
chamber.
go.
Gotta get it out before we get on.
That's funny.
There's your cold open.
Welcome to the world's premier Black Crowes podcast. State of America. Hosted by two of the band's most dedicated fans, David Hudson and Ian Rice. And now, let's get the show on the road.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the State of America podcast. I am one of your hosts, Ian Rice, and with me, as always, Mr. David Hudson. David, how are you, sir?
Ian, I'm giddy like a kid on the night before Christmas.
I know, I've already had to tell you, settle down many times this week.
Settle down, Beavis.
I had to tell you to take a couple of deep breaths and, you know, you're getting like a kid in a candy store here. Which,
look, man, we've got a wild 2 weeks on the State of America podcast. I'm and Patreon. I'm excited.
No, I'm not saying it's without good reason. I'm just trying to have you pace yourself before you burn out before the big event. Big event, of course, being the release of Happiness Bastards on the 15th of March. Everybody's looking forward to that. And I can tell you it's going to be worth the wait.
Yeah. So why don't we go over the schedule, Ian? Obviously, this is a Johnny Colt interview, which is a huge deal for us. We love Johnny. He's a great guest. And then
I think it's worth mentioning, too, that Johnny will now hold the distinction as being the first third-time guest with us.
That's true. That's true. And next week, probably 2 days before the album comes out, we're going to have a member of the Black Crowes on. And we're going to get some detailed information about the album.
We're going to be doing some exclusive stuff with that guest for Patreon, too. So that's an incentive to join up if you haven't already. That's patreon.com/stateofamerica.
Yeah, there's going to be some exclusive breakdowns of some of the songs on that one. And there's going to be video of that one from the current member of the Black Crowes that's coming on.
Yes, and in addition to that, also on Patreon to tie in with the release of the record, we're going to have copies to give away, and we're going to be doing a listening party that was your creation. Isn't that right, David?
Yeah, and Sandy Diamond said we should call it Midnight from the Inside Out.
What a genius idea.
I know. Sandy, shout out. The early morning of record release day, we're going to have our immediate reaction on that. And that's not going to be like in depth, like an album under review, but it's going to be me, Jason, and Ian. And we're going to just run through each song real quick, give our initial thoughts, and then we'll come back to that at some other point.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can't really keep it under wraps at this point, but David and I have been fortunate enough to hear this record in advance in prep for the interview. And this is why I should really be carrying my balls around in a wheelbarrow. That's how big they are right now, because I just rolled the dice and asked for an advance on it. And we were lucky enough to be sent it. So that's how we're going to be able to get the.
Yeah. Don't ask us for it, because you ain't getting it.
Yeah. And but that's how we're going to be able to get our reaction out to you right away, because we're able to hear it in advance of the release a little bit. Like David said, please don't message us. As much as we love you, we can't mm-hmm. be sharing this one around.
Yeah, so we're excited about it. We're very excited about the album. We're excited about what we're going to do on Patreon. I've got at least 4 copies of the album coming to my house. Mm. I think they're all the Amazon orange ones.
And yeah, I've also got, the European clear version. That's the indie record store version there. I found a website. I ordered that. So that's giveaway to somebody. I think I got a CD or two coming.
Yeah, I got some CDs. And so we're going to give stuff away on Twitter, Instagram, Patreon. We're going to spread the love to everybody. This is a big deal, man. When we started this, gosh, Ian, it's almost 5 years ago. You'd be going, hey, you're going to be giving away new Black Crowes music. And I'm just going to be like, well, they released the vault, because that's the only way I thought we would have had this. And obviously the pandemic messed some things up and pushed the timeline back. But I'm excited to have new Black Crowes music. You and I think most of the people kind of see the same thing. If the Robinson Brothers are making music, I'm there for it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's some to be expected skepticism out there. And, I can tell you that, at least from my opinion, and I know David holds the same opinion, as does producer Jason, this is a good record. And it's, it's going to be something you want to hear.
Yeah, we'll go in depth with that next week. Just wanted to, we told you that just so that you knew that we were going to have a like a quick reaction review of it. We're not going to go into anything else about the record, but we just wanted to give you guys a heads up.
Yeah, and I will say, really, if you've been on the fence or for whatever reason, don't sleep on this one. Get your pre-orders in and or head down to your local shop and pick it up on release day.
Yeah, so I don't know if, I mean, I got the email. There's a lot of indie store shops that are going to have like listening parties. You can get the album on the 14th.
Yes. So
my wife happens to work like four blocks from one. Suze is going to walk down there on her lunch break and snag at least one or two copies for us.
That's because she's a good woman.
She's a great woman. She married me.
Well, I mean, that's really her only flaw that I can see. But
everybody's got their cross to bear. You know?
I know. You know, but otherwise, you know, top notch. That's just her one thing, you know, but nobody can be perfect. But also, Record Store Day, as we had mentioned prior, there's going to be a special release from the Black Crowes. It's a Wanting and Waiting 7-inch with Wanting and Waiting on one side, and then a unreleased track from the Sessions, Morsels for Mongrels, on the B side. So we're going to try to secure at least one or two to give away to you folks as well.
But yeah, man, we've got so much going on. And then going forward, these meetups in Nashville at Scoreboard, maybe about 4:30 or so before the show there in Nashville. There's one in Chicago at a place called Snickers. Sean Hillman and Jason Donsis and Justin Kahn and those guys are heading that one up. And then, Ian, what are the details of the one in NYC?
I don't have the details all together yet, but we'll be releasing them to you shortly.
I figure I was going to be like hanging out at a Dave and Buster's or something across the street.
What, in New York City?
Yeah.
It's Manhattan, David. I think I can do better than that. It's a big city. I got to find somewhere.
I'm hoping to record something pretty quick after the Nashville show and get that out there. And I'm debating. Tell me what you think, Ian. When the show starts, should I just put my phone in my pocket?
Yeah.
Or I try to give people set lists. I think I'm just going to put my phone in my pocket.
Listen, not for nothing. And it's a trend that's been continuing. And I get it. But I really feel that people should need to be more present at shows. You know, that's the where it used to be, cigarette lighter out in the air. Now it's all, you see cell phone screens, you know, and I think it's cool. You know, you take a quick video, maybe a one track or something like that. But, maybe right at the beginning or something. But, be in the moment, man. Enjoy it. I don't mean you specifically.
I totally get it. So we have all of that coming up. Patreon is going to be on fire for the next couple of weeks.
And also with regard to the meetups, if anybody in any other city wants to try to put something together of their own under the kind of SOA meetup kind of banner, if you will.
Send you some free stuff.
Yeah. And just let us know. And we will of course put the word out on here and all our social media platforms. So you guys can do your own get togethers. Cause we can't go on tour with this thing. So we're just kind of sticking to our respective cities, but we want to make sure everybody gets together and has a good time with this.
All right. So our guest this week, Johnny Colt,
Mr. Hattrick himself.
We had a great time chatting with him. You're going to hear him talk about different music projects that he's got going. Follow him on Spotify. He actually asked for people to follow him there. He's put out some very interesting EPs, and it's good to have Johnny back playing music again.
Yes, very encouraging to see. And we're, of course, happy to have him back for a third time, and I'm sure it won't be the last time either. We had a great time this time. Always a fun chat with Johnny. So why don't we wrap this up, and we'll get right over to that interview, because it's something you don't want to miss.
And you don't want to be wanting and waiting for it.
That's it, David. Wrap it up. Puns, I'm out. All right. So let's throw it over to Mr. Johnny Colt, and we will see you again soon.
Well, I'm the rusty highwayman. I've been there all your life. And I'm the dirty troubadour, the devil's right hand. Well, I'm the steely knife hanging out your back, the pills in the bottle and the booze in your hand. The bills you ain't paid and all the money you ain't made, the rusty razor blade hovering over your ribs. Catch me if you can, pistols in my hands, I'm the highwayman. Catch me if you can, blood on my hands, I'm the highwayman. And I'll do what I want, and you'll mean what I say. You will call my name. I am the...
All right, so we are very pleased to welcome back to the program for his third appearance, and he has the distinction of being the only guest to have appeared on this program thus far, three times. You know him, you love him, he's a good friend of ours, Mr. Johnny Cole. Johnny, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, sir. Happy to be back for my hat trick.
That's a hockey reference, Ian. Ian's not a big sports guy.
That is a hockey reference. I am a true hockey, not a true hockey fan. I grew up, believe it or not, in Atlanta, but I had hockey around me. My mother was a banker. And at that time, we had a team called the Flames, the Atlanta Flames, which are the Calgary Flames and have been for a long time. But my mother banked all those guys because the practice rink was near her bank. And I played Little League hockey living in Atlanta, which I must have been like one of only a dozen kids that did that. And my favorite pastime is watching, generally on Instagram, hockey fights. I just watch highlight reels of hockey fights, especially when the goalies go at it. That's the best.
Everybody's got something that they fall down the YouTube or Instagram rabbit hole with, you know.
It's hockey fights.
You start out watching stuff, and like an hour later, you're watching people pop pimples, and you're like, "How did I get here?" You know?
Yeah. Oh no, it's terrible.
Johnny, I've told you this a couple of times, and I'll say it for our listeners: these I call them cult fests that we've had have certainly been very special and a lot of fun. And we've got one coming up in a couple of weeks, but we're going to have a lot of repeat visitors that are going to be there for their third time. So no pressure on you, but those things have been very special. I know you've enjoyed them and we've enjoyed them, and thank you for doing them.
Yeah. Listen, it's my privilege and my honor to do them. And I just feel grateful to be in a place where, you know, to be able to make music in any form is an incredible thing to do, and much less to have been able to do it most of my life and have anyone care about anything I was part of. So to be around long enough to be able to connect with people who love the music is incredible for me, because at this point that music's been around so long that I feel less like part of the group that made it. And there's a part that are listening to it. I feel less of there being a divide between those two things and more like we're all just kind of standing around connecting and looking at it and other types of music that we love. I mean, so it's interesting, you know, people that are that connected to the music, it's almost like a certain sort of a filter, if you will, where if you're that far into it, there's got to be something that's common between us. Do you know what I mean? And I found that to be true. Every time we've done one of these events, every single person has been incredible to me. They've been kind and respectful and open, and they kind of seem to appreciate me being open, and we've all kind of, it feels safe, and we're all kind of transparent, and it's been great.
Well, at the one at your place in New Orleans, you and your daughter Isabella and Brad performed for us, and it was Isabella's first time singing in public, from what I understand. And I've tried to tell people that weren't there how good her voice is, but she had a stage presence of somebody that's been doing this a long time. And I thought it was really cool. I thought y'all somehow worked a country song into Fairies Wear Boots. Like, we're listening to this country song and all of a sudden, wait a second, is that Black Sabbath? But that had to be really cool for you to get to share that experience with her.
Absolutely. I mean, what's better than, you know, being in a situation where you're making music with your kids, you know, your family, you know what I mean? Like, how much more organic can it be? Also, it's a testament to surviving a lifetime in a business that can be very unfriendly. It's easy to get sort of jaded when you're dealing with music at a certain level, you know, when the commerce is involved and the egos are involved, including my own, mind you. And the amazing thing about that was that, you know, Isabella came to me and said, that I want you to start a band with me. Now, keep in mind that I haven't played a note in front of anyone since I left Lynyrd Skynyrd.
What year was that?
You guys have probably figured out by now, I have no sense of linear time. That was...
was that 15 or 16?
5 years ago? Seven years ago? So it's a minute. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm sure I could look that up. It's on my phone. I've got photos. If I could look at my phone, I'll know. I'm sorry. I don't have that on my fingertips. I should have my interview skills ready to go. I'm going to say that was 6-7 years ago at this point. And I left and I took a lot of time off. And I started studying visual art and spent most of my time there. I was making very little music, even in my own time, since leaving Skynyrd. The Skynyrd people I loved, there were a lot of things going on. Again, the way the business works and what it does to people, and it's very difficult to be around. Then the pandemic hit, right? And I was teaching school to be helpful, to be of service to my community, and then visual art. And before I knew it, you know, I'm in New Orleans and I'm owning an art gallery and I'm painting and music sort of in the back seat. But it was when Isabella came to me and said, "Hey, can we start a band?" And my answer was no. You know, like I had no interest in playing, and I certainly had no interest in playing with my daughter. Now that might sound like super grumpy old dude, but I'm like, she needs to be playing with people her own age. You know, she's not going to keep this up, you know, just whatever grumpy response I had. And she really pushed me and said, no, I really want you to help me. So basically I said, yeah, sure. Thinking we'll do one rehearsal and she'll get over it. And we did a rehearsal and she did a good job. So I told her I'd do another one. And then she showed up on time and knew her parts and did it the second time and sounded good. I was like, wow, she sounds good. And then the third rehearsal, I was like, okay, this is taking up too much of my time. And now I'm starting to feel like I should invest. So I threw a Loretta Lynn song at her. I'm sorry. I apologize. It wasn't Loretta Lynn. I threw a Patsy Cline song to her.
Yeah.
Called Care of the Blues, which we actually performed for you guys, I think. And she killed it. And I was kind of stunned. And I was like, holy shit, the girl can sing. And I'm not really and I'm saying this because you said it first, right? But I'm not really the parent that I try to be realistic about my kids. I'm kind of a realist with my own level of talent. I have some, I don't have too much. It's limited to it. You know, I think I'm fair. I don't think I'm rude or harsh. I think I'm fair about what my kids can and can't do and myself. But I was really impressed. And then she really started doing the work. And I had no idea what was actually going to happen when she got up on stage in front of people. Because she is actually a very shy, to herself, private individual. So I didn't see a performer in her per se. I'm not saying it's not there, but I didn't see any of the signs of personality that make it obvious. But when she stepped on stage, that was the real test, you know, and I just looked over my shoulder while we were playing and she was taking care of it. You know what I mean? She was really doing a really great job. So one, it was amazing. It was amazing to help her and see her do that. But the real gift here was that her getting me to help her, you know, she's the one who, that relationship between us and helping her make music, suddenly before I knew it, it was just me, her, and Brad Nunez, who shares the art studio with me. He's an amazing artist and a musician as well. He plays guitar in Isabella's band, which, by the way, Isabella's band's called Izzy and the Boo Boos. And it's Isabella, of course, and Brad and I are the Boo Boos. And so once we started playing, the love of playing music just caught on again. And as we started rehearsing her stuff, I was really rusty. So I had to start playing. And then we didn't have a drummer. So I had to teach myself to play drums with my feet. And because it was new and it was challenging, I got hooked. And I live in New Orleans. So I started going into the quarter and I started busking on the street, meaning just performing on the street for change. And now I have multiple musical projects going on and I'm here to talk to you guys about them. And that all kind of happened because Isabella said, you know, Dad, you gotta quit being grumpy and pick up an instrument and get back to it.
Well, when you guys play your first show, let me know. I'll for sure drive down there and we'll get some more people to come as well.
Yeah, I think we are looking really forward to playing these sort of Family Crow based family shows. And we'll be playing a couple of shows in New Orleans proper and then go from there. Isabella is a creative. She's very busy. She's you know, she apprentices at the tattoo shop. She's a counter girl. She's apprenticing to become a full tattoo artist. I think we discussed a little bit. We don't want to out her, but she's quite a prolific graffiti artist here in New Orleans. She's also, her and I are both, I'm in welding school, both in the academic welding during the day, but I am also doing the night workforce program. She's now in welding at night. So her and I weld together in welding school, me and my daughter at night, and we're in a band. She moved back into my place, which is above the studio. So now I'm living in my studio and she's got the house above. So I literally live in, it's where I paint, weld, and make music. And there's not even hot water there. That's where I live. I mean, I'm not kidding, man. I shower cold. You can, it's on. I'm living the life right now. That's all we do is, if we're not making music or painting, we're welding. That's about all we have time for at this point.
So you talked about some new music projects and you have, you've sent me some files over the last couple of months.
Yeah, I've been sending you all kinds of nonsense, but sure.
And, our buddy Seth Miller got a writing credit with Johnny Colt.
Yes. Yes, he does.
He's all excited about that. Explain that kind of avant-garde Captain Beefheart type approach you're taking to some
right.
of this.
So there are, right now there's basically three compartments, if you will, musically going on. Izzy and the Boo Boos, where I'm supporting Isabella, and Brad Nunez is playing guitar in that. Then I have two things going on. One is making my own music under my name, just as a solo artist. The other is this project that I started with Brad in mind. It's called Music for Math and More. And we just refer to it as M3 since it's 3 M's, Music for Math and More, short, it's M3. That is really a place to be able to express music in an evolutionary sense. It's a platform where a lot of stuff I love that I like to make can't live in a lot of pedestrian places. And I don't use the word pedestrian negatively. I mean, people who might come to hear me play music or understand my past or the bands I've been in, they're going to be really thrown. I mean, severely thrown by some of this stuff. And that's not a problem. It's fine. I get it. But I desperately need to do this. And I've been for a long time figuring out how to do it and a way to do it. You know, I feel a connection to people who are listening to anything I have to do with. And I want to be able to communicate clearly. I want everybody to understand where they are in time and space, not be disoriented. I don't want to get into the words like being a brand. That's too much. But clear communication, let you know what you're walking into. So the whole M3 platform and moniker became a place where I could express myself with absolutely no limits, which is hard to do. Actually break some limits, you know, try to frame break and try to get outside of the constraints. But what really pulled it together for me was the experiences that I had with you guys and the events that we did. You know, when I was connecting with all these people that are musicians that love the Crows and followed my career. And then when we did that last event where not only did Isabella sing, but for the first time, guys who played in the Americans and things were up playing with me. And I'm now playing with people who are fans of the Crows. That felt right to me. That felt good to me. That felt correct. And then I thought, okay, well, how can I continue this? How can I interface with other musicians that might like what I've done in a way that's realistic? That's hard to do. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be traveling, flying, and they're not flying to me. No one can afford that. We don't have big record money behind us, but how can we connect? So I had that, and I had this avant-garde music I want to express. And I realized technology is our friend. It's got its negatives, of course, but for me, it's got a lot of positives. And I thought, all right, let's just sit down and go with what we know, what we have. How do we go with this? And what does that mean? So basically M3 works like this. I came up with like a working methodology because it's like a math, right? Music for Math and More. And at the point was it's constructed. So if I start a track, these are the rules. I start a track, let's say, and then I'm going to send you, David, the track. And when I send the track to you, I'm handing it off. Once it's handed off, I don't have control. It's yours. You do whatever you want with it. And when you're done with it, it comes back to me. Now, when it comes back to me, that second stop, I'm just a traffic light. I'm the one administratively loading it up to DistroKid so it can go out for distribution. I'm putting some artwork on it so people can know what they're looking at and name it. And then getting all our publishing together and sending it out. That's just sort of an admin thing. But I send the track to you. You do whatever you want with it. Now, when the track comes back to me, it may go out like that, or I may send it to somebody else. And once it goes to the third party, now neither one of us have control. Whatever comes back is what comes back. Those are the rules so far. You know, it's an evolving thing. This is what we've done so far. Everything is released as a single. There's been no album at this point. It's one song at a time. We have 12 M3 tracks out now. Seth did an excellent track with us. You guys all know that Seth can sing.
Oh yeah.
You know, you've heard me talk about how he's every bit Chris Robinson. And he's his own man, but he's got an amazing voice and he can play the harp and he's super musical. And I was really worried that Seth was going to try to turn the song into a song. You know what I mean? Like into a normal song. So I was like, texted him. I'm like, hey man, don't overthink it. Just go for it. You know? And he sent me back a track that sounds like Godzilla's talking. And it was exceptional. And I was so inspired that Seth so quickly jumped into a frame breaking state of mind, you know? But with this digital handoff thing, it's like collage work, really. You know, no one gets to take total ownership of it. It messes with your head a little bit. It messes with your control. It messes with your ego. But we've already interfaced with 3 or 4 different musicians, and I've got half a dozen standing by. And I'm going to be connecting with a number of non-musicians as well. I'm having to help them administratively understand how to work with the track, but how much more interesting would it be to start sending music to people that aren't musicians and having them manipulate music and see what happens?
I mean, the interesting thing about everything you're describing is it really seems to break it down to it's all about the music. It takes out any kind of the business aspect, which I would imagine after all the years that you put in on the road and with these major acts, that probably the business end gets kind of tiresome after a while.
Yeah, I think that the deal with that is this. I came to play music. You know, look, I watched my mom go out the door 6 days a week as a banker, female banker, not making a lot of money, but had a esteemable job she was proud of that she cared about. And I just felt like if I could make enough money to pay my rent playing a guitar, I won. I won the game. It's a blue collar approach. That's a corny title for it, but I don't know what else to call it. It's a working man's approach. Mm. I came at music as a journeyman. I went to music school to learn so that I could get into the field and play. And at the end of the day, that's what I came to do. And whatever you ask me to play, I'm going to play. I'm going to play at my best. That's a different process than essentially what I'm talking about here. I'm not bemoaning the state of the business as in I'm a tortured artist. And that's not it. That is not what I'm saying. After 30 years of that, And the acuteness of what I was witnessing at Skynyrd at the end, which has a lot to do with people's health, the way the business machine works, commerce as a whole. That's more of a statement on capitalism and unchecked capitalism. We can go spiral down that direction, which we're not going to. The point is, I'm not complaining. I knew what I signed up for, and I was happy to do it. However, after lots of years of hard work, I now have the opportunity and the space to be able to do things differently where those are not a concern. And the truth is, everybody does. It's not that I have so much money that I don't have to work, or however you want to break this down. What it is this: anyone can own the equipment I'm recording on. I don't use anything special. And some of my stuff isn't even that professional. You know, I'm not sending it to Bob Ludwig for mastering anymore. But here's the thing. Everyone can make music and put it directly to release. And unless you've been someone like myself who had to go through the 6 major labels and get signed, if you have never had that experience, you might not appreciate just how magical it is to make music right this minute. Mm. And I want to get everything out of this experience called life I can. And I'm able to just go in my studio, record a song, and put it out that night if I want to. That doesn't mean that's always going to make for the best song. You know, it probably needs some work and some editing and some polishing. And my stuff would sound better if someone else mixed it. And if somebody, you know, I spent the money on mastering and things like that. But what you are getting is a 100% honest and authentic statement about what I'm doing and where I'm at at any given time. And that's what this is about. And if we connect, And if we don't, that's okay too. I don't need you to listen or buy or show up. That's not what this is about at all. And in that sense, I'm free.
You talked about the access to getting music out there. Anybody with a computer can do it. It's so easy to get the music out. And not that people aren't having to pay their dues, but they aren't getting their chops in with playing live. Do you think that's hurting the industry?
Things move in waves. All the kids traded in their guitars for turntables, and then all the kids turned in their turntables for guitars. Isn't that an LCD sound system song? You know what I mean? And I know what you mean, because let's say the Crows. Let's just use that, because that's our basis, right? I played in a band that played four sets a night playing covers for years before I joined the Crows. I had hundreds and hundreds of hours of playing live under my belt where the Crows didn't. But when we did get on the road, the band played every night and got much better quickly. Now, having said that, if you were to compare the Crows to, let's say, any 1930s jazz band from New Orleans, we still haven't put half as much time on our instruments as those guys did. So I think what you're seeing and feeling is how everybody feels every generation to some degree. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, you go back and watch some of those, go look at Buck Owens play guitar, and you just kind of go, oh, okay. You know, who do you see doing that now? You know what I mean? That's I feel the same way. So I don't know what's true. I don't know what will happen with the industry, but I do feel the same feeling you just expressed to me. I just wonder if it has to do with where we are in time and space, not just age, but with the technology. We're in the middle of an unprecedented, unheard of, unpredictable technological boom. I mean, this is ridiculous. You know what I mean? So what do you expect these kids to do? You know what I mean? Like, these devices that we have shortcut everything, even musical instruments. And it's like, you really want me to hammer out the hours to play this piano part when I can sample it? You know, it's like, it's amazing what I can do with my MIDI sequencing in my studio for my keyboard parts. I mean, I'll never be Peter Keys from Skynyrd for sure. And every time I'm playing, I wish he was there instead of me. But the fact that I can piece it together with the computer and get really damn close, so close that you can't tell. Do you know what I mean? You can barely, you might be able to tell, you know what I mean? But it's so close. So for me, the trade-off is this: because I can do this, I can release music as fast as I can make it. And for every song I put out where maybe the pitch isn't perfect on my voice or mastering would have helped it a little bit better, the trade-off is the connectivity, the spontaneity, the freedom, and the fact that it's coming at you in real time. And for me, that trade-off is 100% worth it so far.
Yeah, and I've just, a couple things you said there is very fascinating. And one of the things that came to my mind is, will this whole concept change? Specifically because if you're a younger band, not maybe someone like yourself who's been in successful bands in the past, but if you're a younger band or a younger group and you're looking to try to monetize this and make this a career, these days with how media works and music release works, your only path to making money is to get on stage and start playing. And how will that change how music is made? Because if you're just trying to put things out there and hoping people will buy it, that's not how our world works anymore. You got to get on stage and get people to come to your show.
I think absolutely. What I meant by waves is things drive trends, right? Drives technology might have been able to allow bands to spend more time off stage creating a more complex music. Eventually, the whole business itself will drive people back on stage for live performance because it's compelling. But keep this in mind, right? I think it's really simple, and it can get complicated quickly, and it usually is. But at the end of the day, this is why I make sure that I spend my time making music that I go out of my way to make sure it's not precious. Okay. There are two reasons for it. You know, one, I don't have the talent that the Beatles have. So if you're not Brian Wilson, do you know what I mean? And you're not going to write Pet Sounds, you know, that guy's music can be precious. Mozart, Amadeus Mozart, Bach, these guys, Louis Armstrong, their music can be precious. They're at the top of the game. My strength, as I see it, is the ability that I'm allowed to express who and what I am musically. That's the gift. I try to be realistic about what I can and can't do. So what I mean by that is this. When it's not precious, it can just flow. So at the end of the day, compelling is compelling. Doesn't matter the genre. Doesn't matter how we get paid. It doesn't matter the distribution channels. Compelling music finds its way. If the people at any given time and space in the timeline of history connect with a certain piece of music that's been written that speaks for them and touches them, the two connect. It doesn't matter how obscure the music is. It will find its way eventually. Will the artist be alive or not? Who knows? So if you believe that, then I don't have to worry about certain frequencies in my mastering. You either like what I'm saying, you connect with me, you're feeling what I'm feeling, or you're not. And I'll give you the great example because we're on a Crows thing. It's not an insult to the record. It's a fact. A fact based on the people's opinion who made the record. No one felt that the Black Crowes record sounded good, Shake Your Money Maker, when it was finished. George felt like the engineer had broken his record. There was fighting about it. People were very upset. It was mixed in a weird room. There's no low end on it. On and on and on and on and on. No one's complaining about it, are they? So now the record is a testament to this and that or whatever it is to you. That's fine. The point is, it's a good record. It mattered to people. People care about it. So the fact that maybe some low-end frequencies aren't there, or the mastering didn't do what the producer wanted to do, is insignificant in the wash. So for me, with time and maturity, it's gotten a lot easier. You know, when you see Rick Rubin talking about a lot of this stuff these days with his book and whatever your take on him is, just put it to the side for a second. Many of the things he's saying, I agree with 100%, which is just this. Make what you're going to make. That's the gift. Do it. It's about getting through the day, expressing your creative self, finding a way to cope. Life brings a lot at us. It can be very complicated and very painful and very fun and very positive. Music's this amazing gift, or whatever your art form is. And you now have this amazing time where you can make whatever you want to make and put it in front of as many people as you can get in front of, just because. And that's enough of a reason, right?
Yeah.
You get up and go out into the world because you can. Most of us just get up and do things because we can, not because we have to. You get up because you can. It's so incredible.
This is maybe a good point to interject and ask you the question I want to ask, because I'm an unabashed 90s fan. I love all alt rock and everything. And I follow all these bands as they head into the 2000s. And I have always been fascinated how the bass player for my favorite band, obviously you playing in the Black Crowes, would end up in a band like Train. And I don't think I've ever heard the story of how do you get a gig like that? And how do you come across those guys? How do you meet them? And then, you know, you're on the For Me It's You record, their fourth record. I've just always been fascinated about such a 180 in sort of musicality that is, and what you thought of that experience in that band, and for all the naysayers about Train, what do you have to say about that music and the enjoyment of playing it? Or was it just like you were saying, like I got hired to play and I played?
The Train situation goes basically like this. My friend Brendan O'Brien produced their records. Mm-hmm. My friend Tony Hernandez did the art for the covers. I knew John Landau, their manager. So our worlds were connected. Mm-hmm. Train lost their bass player, who I thought was a very unique, talented bass player. He had a very particular approach to playing bass, which had a lot to do, honestly, with the way that band sounded. But remember, most people said that Drops of Jupiter was the greatest Black Crowes song that the Crowes never wrote. And there are other people who said, too bad the Crowes couldn't write the song that won the Grammy, but Train did it. Lots of people felt like Drops of Jupiter was just 2 degrees off from being a Black Crowes song. Whether that's true or not, just saying what people said. Now, they lost their bass player to drug use. His name was Charlie. Again, talented guy. And hey, I get it. So Charlie started falling down on the job and they needed to replace him. Train, unbeknownst to most people at the time, were a workhorse band. I've never seen a band work harder than Train. So they needed a guy who could fly out to Providence, Rhode Island, play a 2-hour show without a rehearsal and stay out for 3 weeks and get them through a tough spot. And there's only a handful of people you're going to call. So when you need a sober, stand-up, on-time guy who can get it all done, you know, that's been there, that's had the experience, that you know you can count on, it's really not that – it's a shorter list than you'd imagine, actually. Mm-hmm. So Brendan called me and said, they're in trouble. They need help. And I said, of course I'll go help them. Because I had been hearing Train's records since Brendan had been working with them, because Brendan and I were such close friends that – I'd invariably be driving in the car where he had rough mixes. So I listened, I watched and heard those records privately being born and felt connected to them to a degree. And it's, some of it's not as far off as you would think. You know what I mean? Now, the real thing that got me was when I got there, I was blown away by the guys. I guess because Pat's from Erie, Pennsylvania and grew up in a working class family, that I suddenly showed up in this band. Now, remember, this was after the Crows. Mm-hmm. Now, I had my band Brand New Immortals and done a few things on my terms, but I hadn't been in a full functioning act since the Crows. And the mental health and the attitude of the guys in Train was the polar opposite of the Crows. And it was super refreshing. Pat got up every morning at 6 a.m. and was at a radio station singing the high notes to When I Look to the Sky at 7 fucking a.m. And I was the new guy, so I was the guy that had to go with him. You know what I mean? But I'm the sober guy, too, so I'm the one up at 6. You know what I mean? So, and listen, I was honored. Every time that guy showed up, his eyes were bright. He answered all the questions. He has an interesting – he's an interesting version of rock and roll. His instincts for rock and roll are different than mine and sometimes were odd to me. I didn't quite understand how Pat was seeing the world, you know what I mean, as my front guy. But at the end of the day, what Pat did was hit all the notes all the fucking time. There wasn't a radio. He didn't complain. He didn't bitch about anything. You know what I mean? He's got iron lungs. Erie, Pennsylvania. That's what I say. That place is, have you ever been there, man? It's, the winter there is incredible. On that lake, it's freezing. And Pat was an animal. The whole band worked. Everyone was friendly. You know, they had their moments, you know, like any group. But mm-hmm. when you're in a bus full of people, they're also family guys. It was like, okay, we're going to be on the road for 3.5 weeks and we're going to go home for a week and we're going to do that all year long. It's like, okay, yeah, you're going to play your guitar all night long, every night, with people that are reasonably sane. This is going to be great. And it was absolutely fantastic for 7 years. And then, you know, as things do in a band, Pat had other interests. Pat's life, his personal life changed dramatically. He's a parent. He got a divorce. His perspective on life changed. I tried to support him. Eventually, it was impossible for us to stay in the same room. But that's not because we hated each other. It's just going totally different places. Here's the crazy part about Pat. No one can touch him. And the crazy thing is, he'll sing the Aerosmith and Led Zeppelin, you know, all day long. And you're just like, wow, let's do more of that. But then when Pat sings by himself, if you leave him alone, he sings a very particular his own way. You know what I mean? And it's so crazy because, again, it's Pat's career. He can do what he needs to do with it. But it's really, you know, at the end of the day, the frustrating thing about Pat would be like, okay, I got you that on this kind of soft version of the song, but you know, if we just dialed it over here a little bit, it would sound like Zeppelin. He'd be like, no, but I want to sound like this, you know, and him and I would kind of, I'd want it to be a little heavier, you know, it'd go back and forth. But that was my biggest problem. Now think about that compared to, hey, my best friend just overdosed. You know, I wasn't having those kind of experiences in Train, and I was good with that. Was it a little less rock and roll? It was, for sure. And I was completely good with that.
Johnny, as we get a little bit closer to wrapping this up, I do have one Crows question to ask you. They released the Southern Harmony box set, which I've told you, Southern Harmony is my favorite album of all time. I think it deserves to be mentioned with Exile on Main Street, with, you know, the Led Zeppelin albums, you know, any of the great Tom Petty albums. It's the most important piece of music that I've ever heard. You guys come off the road. You've added Mark and you've added Ed. When you go into the studio and you walk out, you know, I've heard 8 days, I've heard 20 days, or however long it took. Did you realize what y'all had just put on tape?
Let me address the day thing real quick, because there's a lot of discussion. When you have a manager and you're a band, and everything's always being shaped, presented, it's storytelling. Doesn't mean they're lying, but people lean into things, right? For the drama, and, you know,
the mythology.
There's plenty of Jim Morrison mythology, right? Jim Morrison spent a large part of his life just being drunk. You know what I mean? But still, you know what I mean? But still, he's Jim Morrison. You know what I mean? So I'm just saying, it's not all, you know, he's not the Lizard King every day. You know what I mean? I'm just saying. So The thing is this, I don't remember technically how many days what happened. Here's what I think happened. I think the basic tracks were laid down in about 8 days. We had been playing that stuff on tour the whole time. You know what I mean? Like we knew what we were doing. We were good at what we were doing. We knew how to make a record at that point. We knew how to play together was the most important thing. So I think, you know, me, Steve, Rich, the core of the songs was probably done in about 8 days. It sounds about right to me. That's 8 to 10 days, something like that. It's a, what is that? That's like a song a day and an extra maybe here and there. You know what I mean? I think that's possible. That sounds about right. By the time you put the guitars and the overdubs and the vocals and the this and the that, you know, you're probably getting out to 20 days, if not a month, tops. Either way you slice it, the record, it's not a false presentation of what we're doing. It went down quickly. We knew what we were doing. Chris sang a lot of his vocals. You know, Brendan was really smart, if I'm not mistaken. I wasn't technically watching everything that was going on, but they just put, you know, Chris with a 57 or a 58. It's not be nerd talk. That's just a ball, something like a live mic. He's just singing in front of the monitors like we're on stage. Chris was singing his ass off. I mean, just crazy great. And there was a lot of cameras rolling and photos being made. There's just all kinds of stuff going on. And it all kind of was a big whirlwind. I didn't know we made a record at the time that would be something that you would categorize with Exile or a Zeppelin record. What I did know was, or what I felt, I should say, is that at that moment, we were as good a band as existed. Mm-hmm. Like at that moment, I felt like a fighter. Like, well, I'm at the top of my game. We are as lean and mean as we're getting, and we're still climbing. And you felt like an animal, and it was powerful, and it was an amazing, it felt like winning. It was, that was the, by the way, that is the most addictive feeling I have ever had. Mm-hmm. That feeling was such a nectar that has a lot to do with why personally I'm not walking on stage in something that I feel, this is just my opinion. I'm not making this is, let me make this clear. This is not a derogatory comment toward the Crows. I'm saying I would need to know that I'm not moving around in something that's a shadow of what it was. Let me explain. I'd rather play in Train or Hall & Oates band than play in a shadow version of what was great about the Crows. So what I'm saying to you is, a better way to make it clearer is, I got out of the ring. I don't need you to clap for me. I don't need to get back in there. Very few fighters leave at 30-0 or whatever, right? They all got to get their ass back in there. I'm not getting back in there. Not unless I knew that I was going to be as good, or in this situation, as a we. See, this is even harder. I can control my own training. I can't control everybody else. If we're not going to be that good, then why would I do it? It would either be for money or the wrong kind of ego. And I am not going to disrespect what the universe allowed me to be part of. This has nothing to do with any of the individuals in the band. It has nothing to do with that. I will not disrespect what I got to be part of by crossing back over onto it just so someone can pay me or I can stand there while you tell me I'm great. Do you know what I'm saying? Not doing it.
Well, it's such a special album to me.
I agree with you. To me, that's the statement.
It's been It's been there for me since it came out. It's always there for me. We were talking on an episode. I never go, I'm going to listen to Hotel Illness or No Speak. I start with Sting Me and take it all the way to Time Will Tell. So I do that with Pink Floyd records. I don't pick songs. I listen to the entire albums.
Yeah. Listen, I do the same with Pink Floyd. I tell you what, no one listens to Pink Floyd more and knows the song titles less than me. I was driving and I went to listen to metal and I was like, I don't know a single song title. I looked down and I was like, huh. You know, I was just like, wow, what's, you know, the titles didn't make any sense. And I was like, and then the song would play and I'd be like, I love this song. I never even realized the title was whatever. You know what I mean? Like
one crazy. Of the most underappreciated rock albums of the 70s, metal. Love it. Echoes, Fearless. I mean, classic.
Oh, by the way, Fearless. I was like, Fearless, what song is this? And it starts and I'm like, of course, I've heard this a million times. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, that is for me. This is not the cool guy statement, but I don't mind. I don't mind being the not cool guy. For me, my Pink Floyd, now you got to remember, man, I grew up with my mom and her boyfriend smoking weed, getting high, listening to Pink, Dark Side of the Moon. You know what I mean? Like, so I grew up like that, right? So Pink Floyd for me starts at metal, because that's why I was re-listening through it the other day, why I brought it up, because I was like, wait a minute, let me figure out where. You know, there's the Syd Barrett Pink Floyd. You know, where does my Pink Floyd start? And I was like, oh, Umaguma or Atomic Heart or, you know, Atomic Mother. You know, so I went back and I was like, none of those. It starts at metal and it ends at the wall.
I mean,
I'm not saying there's not great Pink Floyd songs on either. I'm just saying that's my Pink Floyd. Small fact that no one cares about. If you say to me at any given time, anywhere, favorite guitar solo of all time, it's time, Pink Floyd. Mm. That is the greatest example of musicality and a solo that's structured like a symphony. It's futuristic and the blues all at the same time. And above all, it's just, it's a song inside a song. It's so incredible to me. David Gilmour is absolutely one of my favorite guitar players of all time. As a matter of fact, I try on the stuff, the new stuff I'm doing. I'm doing a very poor job of it, mind you, but that's who's on my mind most of the time. I'm trying to eke out some slide or lead guitar. It's usually him. Just trying to be musical like him. That's all.
I was on a podcast last week and we were talking about Dark Side of the Moon and we were talking about the exact same solo. And to me, again, I'm not musical, but he and Mark Ford have a lot of similarities. Is they know what not to play, and the notes they play, they make them count.
Yeah. Listen, don't you Mark Ford, I think without a doubt continues to be underrated. And I think that part of that has to do with just the fact that Mark's career is kind of hung up in the whole Crow thing. I'm still waiting to, you know, you want to hear Mark in that environment where he gets that chance for that bust out record. And I still think it's absolutely possible that it'll happen. I mean, I haven't spoken to Mark in a billion years, you know, but he's an incredible guitar player. It was an honor it was an unbelievable experience to be able to stand and play next to him. Look, you know, Gary Rossington, Mark Ford. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? Like you're talking about those. Mm-hmm. Mark is at that level, no question. And I can't imagine what would have happened with Mark's playing if, I mean, he had a clear runway in the Crows. Don't get me wrong, but man, if Burning Tree had caught traction and Mark, who knows? I don't know, but I do know that Mark's got an incredible musical voice, and anything could happen with Mark. That's for sure.
Well, Mark has phenomenal solo records too. He just doesn't, it kind of ties into that underrated piece that you spoke of. When a major guitarist from a band goes solo, typically speaking, it gets noticed. When Slash puts a solo band together and goes out there, people recognize it and they buy it. Whereas Mark doesn't have that notoriety, but his solo output on all the records he's put out is it's right up there with some of the best records in the catalog. Like, right, it's up there with a lot of the best Crows records.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's more like the moment. What I mean is this, like the moment that Mark walks on and plays on the Neil Young song that suddenly is the compelling song that we all catch traction on. Do you know what I mean? When Mark plays with that Tom Waits song, that's the fucking one that wins the Grammy. It's just that moment is what I mean. You know what I mean? It's just that moment is the turnkey, you know, and it usually, you know what I mean? Because there is appetite, 1,000 million people listening to their Slash. You know what I mean? So he's done. You know what I mean? So he's in. You know what I mean? Like there's just that other layer of thing, you know? And I just think Mark has the his talent is unquestionable. His record, his songwriting. I love Burning Tree. He's got a great singing voice. He's got it all. It's just, again, it's that moment. And once you have the moment, then suddenly it goes backwards too. So when the moment happens, everybody discovers everything that came before it. You know what I mean? It's like when he plays on the next John Mayer song or whatever, you know?
So Johnny, always good to have you on. You know, it's an open door. You can come on whenever you want to.
Before I leave, Music for Math and More, we'd appreciate it if you went on to Spotify, that's where we're focusing, and were to follow us. Understand that when I'm asking you to follow Music for Math and More, you may hate what we're doing. It may be unlistenable to you. That's okay. That doesn't make you the odd one out. We're the odd ones. But what you are doing by following it is voting for unpremeditated, frame-breaking creativity in it. And the platform will allow me to get more and more musicians to interface with us. So the more people that follow us, obviously, the more momentum I get, the more people who I'm going to be able to collaborate with and get that going. So that's nice. Also, while you're on Spotify, if you just go over to me, Johnny Culp, just kind of pay attention, follow along if you care, and stuff will just be there when it's there. There's no big announcements or anything like that. And I appreciate, as always, you guys having me on the podcast. I love talking music with you guys. Y'all are the best. And man, again, I'll say goodbye by just saying, hey, thank you guys for keeping a heart and a community around something I was involved with that's been such a big part of my life for 30 years. I can't thank you enough.
But now it's evolved past the Crows. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I want to go back to where it all, you know, without you guys have been such a consolidator for the fan base and the communication, and you have made it an absolute runway for me to be reintroduced to this community and feel comfortable and safe isn't the right word, but comfortable. I don't know, getting into this space and being able to talk about it and stuff. So I appreciate it.
Johnny, we always let our guests pick a playout song, but I'm going to suggest one for you. What if we play the song that, that Seth Miller was on?
Oh man. Yeah. Listen, it's totally, yeah, absolutely. It's totally bananas. So brace yourself. It's not your usual music from Seth. Just know that Seth had the courage, and that's what it takes sometimes to be able to make music like this. So please do.
All right, guys. As always, it was nice to have Johnny on. And since our producer is here, we're going to let him take us out.
Stay tall, everyone. Thank you.
Start a polycule.